What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast, and happy Tuesday. Jordan here on the mic, and I've just returned from pretty much two straight weeks in Wyoming doing some filming, a little bit in Idaho as well. And yeah, it's kind of been a roller coaster, just trying to get back into the groove here at home and getting caught up on things. Quick, podcast news. We are having a little bit of trouble with iTunes, Stitcher, and another one I think people are using is Podcast Addict. It isn't updating very well. We're working on it, but with season here, it's kind of hard to coordinate everything and kind of get everybody in the same place at the same time and have enough time to really deal with it. Podbean is a really good app, and it's all up to date. It updates really fast. And then, of course, just on the rockslide.com under the podcast tab, there's all of our podcasts. That's where they get uploaded to first. So that's the best place to find them right now. I'm really sorry. We're working on it. I don't really understand how all that stuff works. But we're working on it. We'll get it fixed and get all that, all those episodes getting uploaded back to iTunes. So just a little bit of housekeeping stuff there. Some new Rockslide articles. There aren't really too many new ones that I haven't mentioned already. Again, with season, everything just kind of slows down because we all get really busy and whatnot. So I kind of brought up a older one. Hash Marks or Turrets, Mule Deer Hunter's Perspective by Robbie Denning. I know Robbie likes to use the hash marks, but that is a really interesting article just to kind of, you know, differentiate or whatever between the two. They definitely each have their place. I think I've used both. Most recently I've used turrets. And if you really know that turret and you shoot with it a lot, you can be super effective with it. But those hash marks can also be really effective. So go check that out. That'll be linked in the description. And then another sort of a throwback. I just did this article just this last summer. It's for the Crispy Colorado boot. And I just got back from a hunt with those Crispy guys, actually. And Justin wore those Colorado boots as well. And by the end of our hunt, we did, So we hunted for 5 days. I think our average day mile-wise was 9. We were hunting from like a base camp, like vehicle base camp, would drive to the trailhead and then walk in. And it was a pretty solid 2.5 miles just to where we kind of started hunting, the very start of it. And then we would go up from there and you know, go hunt around or whatever. And then we had to come back. So got a lot of trail time with those boots, and then a lot of, steep terrain, rocks, stuff like that. So the boots did extremely well. I never had a hot spot where, you know, they kind of, my feet would ache, but that wasn't really because of the boot. That would happen with any boot. My feet were just fatigued. That's kind of a long ways to walk. I think our longest day was 13 miles, which was the first one that we did. And I was really impressed with them then. And it just carried on throughout the week and did really well. And actually on our last hike out of the last afternoon, Justin was in front of me. He's like, seriously, these boots, I just can't be more happy with them. They just keep surprising me. And like those boots kept surprising me too, just because, I mean, like 13 miles is a long ways. Your feet are sweating, you're on uneven ground, you're on, you're side hilling a lot. So it's hard to get a boot that's not going to, I mean, at that point have some kind of a, like give you a hot spot or give you any kind of troubles at all. But I would lace those things in the morning and I wouldn't lace them or relace them or anything until that evening when I got back to the camp and took them off. So, can't say enough good things about those boots still. Durability wise, they're still doing really good. No complaints. And then another kind of, I haven't personally shot these yet, but the Iron Will broadheads, Les Welch did, a review. He's kind of been the Iron Will guy to review. And I know Tony Treach likes them a lot as well, but, Justin shot those on this last hunt. He shot his bull at 48 yards. And it was a complete pass-through, and I picked that broadhead up and ran my thumb across it just to see how sharp it was. And I legitimately could not believe how sharp that broadhead still was after it ran through an elk. Like, I've tried a few broadheads and, you know, had them run through animals and felt them afterwards. And it is like, I think that that iron will is sharper than like the broadheads that I'm shooting this year before it even gets run through an elk. Like, those iron wills after they ran through the elk were sharper. So just experiencing that, I can't comment on the tuning of them, anything like that, but just, and it looked like nothing had even touched it. Like, it looked like a new broadhead and it was still extremely sharp. So, like, I'm going to use those things next year for sure. I've been wanting to anyways for elk, but just didn't have an elk hunt this year, so didn't get them. But anyways, a plus on those for sure, just after seeing that. Coming up, so for hot forum threads, there's actually some good ones. There was one that was started that says electric bikes will now be classified as non-motorized vehicles by National Park Service and then the U.S. Forest Service. So before, they would technically be classified as a motorized vehicle. So if you got to a trail where it was foot or horse traffic only, or I think you can use pedal bikes, but since those electric bikes have a little motor in them, you couldn't use them on a motorized trail, but now they're switching that. So that's going to kind of change the game. The only thing I'm not too worried on it is a lot of those trails get super gnarly, and I don't know if you'd want to ride an electric bike across some of the ones that we've been on this year, but I guess that's kind of a hot topic over there right now. And then another pretty good one is, do you hunt alone, is what it's called. And, you know, just talking about hunting alone, and I know that's a question that I get quite a bit, is kind of how do I hunt alone, or you know, would I recommend this person hunt alone? It just really depends. I've hunted a lot by myself. There's a certain fear in there. I totally get that. One of the things with me is I got to spend so much time in the woods before, and especially during the summer, that I would just kind of accustom myself to it. And then when we got into season, it wasn't really that big of a deal. But one thing I would say about me hunting alone, I'm good for like 4 days. And then you kind of start losing me after that. It's tough without somebody there kind of keeping spirits high and leaning off of each other. It can get difficult. So this is another one too. A lot of people don't like this, but, you know, I'll bring earbuds with me so I can maybe, you know, unwind, listen to some music at night, listen to some podcasts, really, if nothing more, to hear somebody else's voice and just to, you know, talk like that. Because one time, like last year when I was getting off my Arizona hunt, I wasn't even by myself that much. I was by myself for like 2 full days, I think. And I got off the mountain and I got a call from a weird number, and it was actually DirecTV wanting me to re-up my subscription. And I let them give me the full sales pitch just because I wanted to hear somebody talk. So that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. So sometimes just that little bit of hearing somebody else talk can help you a bit. So I like doing that, taking those earbuds with me to have that kind of interaction or whatever. You can listen to a book or whatever. But I know a lot of people say that really, I guess, taints your experience out there, which I don't know. I'm not about that, but it just seems like anything that can help me stay out there longer, I'm going to do. And then another one that was pretty entertaining to read through was the worst mid-hunt equipment failure. There's a lot of headlamps on there. Doesn't surprise me. After you've had a headlamp for so long, I mean, it's got to go out at some point. That's why I take a little backup, like that Petzl E-Lite's a good one. Another good one that Kendall Card was using was a Petzl, I'll link it in the description. I cannot remember what that thing is called. I just thought about it though. I think it's called the Bendy. That sounds right. But that thing is little and it is super bright. He used it for the whole hunt and didn't even really use his primary light. So that's a super good one to link to over to Black Ovis. And then some other like hunting news. There wasn't too much going on. But one thing that was kind of interesting over on Go Hunt was Utah is going to, or is trying to anyways, fence in Antelope Island. So Antelope Island is just like a little island west of Salt Lake, out in the middle of the Salt Lake. And there's a bunch of gigantic mule deer. They really limit the access over there for the mule deer to hunt them and pretty much everything else, I think, from what I hear. So that's, they're fixing to fence that in, it sounds like. So that'll be a good one to go look at. And then for this week's Hot Minute, I want to talk about still hunting tactics. When I was with Robbie earlier this month, we still hunted quite a bit. Like I would say like 15 hours probably over the course of probably 4 days. We didn't really still hunt. Well, there was a couple of days I didn't still hunt. So over about the course of 3 days, it was 15 hours. And that was quite a lot, I thought. I haven't really still hunted that much, but it just takes a ton of it. Like, it's tedious. It's kind of a tedious tactic because basically what you're doing with still hunting is you're trying to walk up on deer in their beds or as they're, you know, feeding in the timber somewhere that you can't glass them from. You don't really know they're there, but you know that the area holds deer. It might hold one certain deer or whatever. And you can just move slow and, you know, kind of glass through the timber and hopefully just catch them moving beds or getting up to grab a bite real quick before they bed back down, or you can catch them in their beds. And we actually caught one in their bed, and that one buck in his bed. And that's kind of what sold me on it, that like, yeah, this can definitely work. Now, Robbie said, you know, that'll happen once every like 2-3 years, I swear is what he told me. Once every 2 or 3 years is when that will actually work. And we did. We were 34 yards or something like that from a buck, like a nice buck. But yeah, we were dang close to him, walked right up on him. And it was kind of crazy. And since he was in his bed, he felt comfortable enough that he was just going to let him walk by. Like, Robbie was a little bit in front of me, and we talked about this in the podcast that we just released yesterday for Muley Monday, which is basically a recap of that entire hunt. So go check that out if you haven't yet. But yeah, that deer was just going to sit tight and let Robbie walk by. But I had seen him bedded down the hill from us, turned around looking up back at us, and he just had it. You could see his eyes over the top of this stump from my perspective, and he was just, thought he was really well concealed, and he was just going to let Robbie walk by. So it's kind of interesting to think about how many deer you've actually walked by and how many of those like knew you were there and just let you walk by them. It's kind of crazy. But some of the still hunting tactics that we did, you know, we would kind of hunt from, well, in this particular situation, like, you always want to be on top. Typically, you always want to be on top and looking down, and so you can see farther and you're looking down on the deer and whatnot. But in our situation, just kind of how things laid out, we ended up hunting from the bottom up to start the day out quite a bit. And then once we got on top, we would completely loop around this big timber patch where Robbie thought the big deer was going to be. And we drop in maybe, oh dang, so it was probably 500 yards from the top to the bottom, 600 yards from the top to the bottom. And we would probably get 200 yards below the top, if not a little bit more. And then we'd start working our way across. But what we'd do is we would get on top and we would wait for those thermals to switch on that steep hillside. So it was kind of pulling our thermals up. But in that place, typically the wind was blowing across where the deer were bedded. So we would get totally around the bedding area to where we'd have the prevailing wind in our favor. And then we'd also have the thermals in our favor. And we typically go in there like, 10:30, 11 o'clock, when we really knew that those thermals had switched. You want to be above their bedding area. Not, you want to be going through their bedding area, but kind of on the top side of it. Because, you know, like Robbie and I were taught, well, he was really teaching me. He just said, you know, turn around and look up. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff there you can't really see. A deer is going to pick you out so fast if he's above you looking down, than if you were coming in from above him and he's probably bedded away from you. So, yeah, we went in like that, and you basically just, like, take a few steps and just look and listen and just move very, you know, not, don't move abrupt, move very fluently, watch where your feet are stepping, and don't get too flustered. Like, one day we jumped, and it was actually right before we came across that buck, there was a grouse that flew out, and, you know, you think, yeah, that's a lot of noise, everything's going to jump up and run. Well, they hear that stuff all the time, kind of like rocks banging around. So that even carries over into stocks. Like, if you roll a rock off on accident or something, and you think like, oh, yeah, he knows I'm there now. He might not, because they hear noises like that quite a bit. And so if you just stand there and just stop and take your time, give it a little while to calm down, they might be just fine. If you're coming over like a little roll in the slope where it was kind of exposing new country, like, you're also exposing yourself. So that's when Robbie would really slow down and like take a step, maybe two, and look around. Whereas if it was just kind of flat and you could pretty much see everything, he might only take, you know, 2, 3, 4 steps maybe, but they were a little bit quicker steps than if he was kind of exposing himself in a new country, exposing new country. So those are kind of some still hunting tactics that I learned from him. You know, we did bump a buck. We were walking down the top of the ridge and we bumped a buck out. I just looked over and I saw the back of his rack taken off down the hill. And I'm like, hey, you know, we just jumped this deer. And, you know, of course, Robbie's like, dang it. But we just went around. We still hunted through that entire thing. And then went back to where one of our other buddies was glassing and sat down with him for a couple hours. And we glassed that buck up only maybe 300 yards from where he was bedded before, straight down the mountain. We glassed him up bedded again. So don't think, you know, especially if you're kind of moving, if you're moving slow through there, you know, don't, if you bump a buck, don't think that he's just going to be gone forever, you just completely disrupted the forest, because chances are you probably didn't. Just kind of keep you know, your voices down, keep slow fluid movements, try to keep as quiet as you can, and it can work. I know, because we snuck up on one. Like, I could have shot him with my bow. So that's basically what I got for you on this Tuesday. Coming up on Saturday, our episode is going to be with my buddy Dalton Wilco from here in Northwest Nebraska. I went to high school with him, basically grew up with him, and he does a lot of Euro taxidermy now. So we're going to talk about kind of how to do it yourself on a Euro mount, and also talk a little bit about velvet. We're a little late for that, I do know, but it'll be some good things to keep in mind for next year. But that's what we got coming up. Don't forget to subscribe. And again, we're sorry for the little bit of technical difficulties, but we will get that taken care of. And yeah, we'll keep kicking episodes out to you guys every Saturday, and then the Tipsy Tuesdays. Thanks again for tuning in. We've been getting a ton of support. We really appreciate it. And yeah, just encourage everybody to hop over to the forums, join in the conversation. Signing up for the forums is free, and there's some good conversation on there. You can learn a lot. So hope everybody has a great week.